Don't waste your dragon, is my point.
We all know the truth. More connects us than separates us. But in times of crisis, the wise build bridges, while the foolish build barriers.
You raise walls, I destroy them. Let's see who prevails.
Just because something works doesn't mean that it cannot be improved.
I say we take off and nuke the entire site from orbit. It's the only way to be sure.
Allow my sword to join you in the fight against evil.
The world needs us to chase dreams.
We have to dedicate ourselves each and every single day to this fight because I can't do it alone.
You, the people, have the power. The power to create machines. The power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful. To make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us all unite.
Welcome to Torture Cinema.
It's an ancient Chinese art, and everyone knew their part from a fainting to a slip and kicking from the hip.
I'm not even sure what that means, but I love it. I'm Jen.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Brandon.
And today on Torture Cinema, we are finally reviewing Super Inframan, which Joseph has been begging for months and months and months to finally win the torture poll. And guess what? It did. So here we are.
We didn't rig it, did we?
No, it finally just won on its own.
Okay, just making sure.
I think everybody got sick of seeing it there. So they were like, fine, just do the darn podcast. Either way, we're finally here to do it, which is very exciting. So why don't we share what we're drinking? Because this is Torture Cinema. And even if we're not drinking anything alcoholic, we still share. Why don't you go first, Paul?
Well, since tomorrow is a work day, this is fortunately recording this in the middle of the week. I am just drinking Pure Hydro, H2O.
Pure Hydro, baby. One of my favorites. Brandon, how about you?
I am also on the H2O front, although all of my water is now finished.
Oh, that's sad.
Water is life, Brandon.
Water is very important.
All right, and I am actually drinking a slightly alcoholic beverage. I think there's one shot of rum in here, so it's my usual Tang tea, basically because I have rum and I don't want to drink it straight, so I have it with my Tang tea because it tastes good, because I actually hate alcohol.
That sounds like a good way to like deal with not liking alcohol.
Right. I mean, I do enjoy beer, but in terms of hard alcohol, I try to avoid it as much as possible. So it only goes into mixed drinks and only really when I'm doing Torture Cinema and don't have beer, which seems reasonable.
Seems legit.
Right. All right. Who would like to do our summary this evening? How about you, Brandon?
I would love to.
Oh, good.
Because I thought this movie, despite the name of this podcast, leading assumptions about this movie, I thought this movie was dope.
I bet you did, but really quickly, part of the reason that I wanted you on this specific episode of Torture Cinema is what, Brandon?
It may have something to do with the fact that I am the co-host of a little podcast here on the Skiffy and Fanti Network called Righteous Kicks, which is where me and my friend Iori Kusano talk about Kamen Rider, which this has a lot in common with. Super Inframan literally exists because of the tokusatsu craze traveling from Japan to China and trying to capitalize on that. So I felt like I was at home. I felt like I was watching something that I already enjoyed.
Exactly. I was like, wait a second. If we're going to be watching a tokusatsu, then obviously I have to have the expert on the show. So thank you for coming on. Why don't you give us that summary?
As much as this movie can be possibly summarized, somewhere in the far-flung future of this movie of 2015, Earth is under threat by a supernatural creature known in the English dub as Princess Dragon Mom, and a series of Chinese scientists gather to defend the Earth from the threat of her and her evil minions. by turning one of their fellow scientists into a superhero known as Inframan by the most peculiar surgery ever. Most peculiar non-surgery surgery that I've ever seen in film.
It looked more like an a game of Operation.
Gone horribly wrong.
It looked like playing a game of Operation with a box that's still closed.
Yes, that's exactly it. Best description ever. Sorry, it was so odd. I couldn't get over that scene.
It was very strange. But our hero, Lema, becomes Inframan and decides to strike against Princess Dragon Mom's evil forces while said evil monsters attempt to attack Professor Liu, who gave him his Inframan powers, and as a result seem to always get in run-ins specifically with his family and no one else at all times, but still. And then a series of fights ensue, each one slower and duller than the last, until all of the monsters are defeated and the Earth is saved.
Yeah, that's about it.
Yep.
Slower and duller than the last.
He's not wrong.
I know.
But we might be getting into likes and dislikes there.
Brilliant.
I mean, I'm also being generous to the movie in large part because a lot of those first fights were actually really neat. The designs of the suits notwithstanding, which we will get into as well. But somewhere near the end, they were just like, you know what? We have only like 20 minutes left, and we still haven't used all of our monsters. So I guess we'll just fight all of them at once. Maybe not.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty accurate description of how the production went. Because in some regards, it felt like the plan was to make this into like a TV show, but it was just a movie. So they had all the stuff there for multiple episodes, and then they had to smush it into a movie. That's what it felt like. I'm sure that's not the actual intention they had at the beginning, but there were definitely moments where I was like, why isn't this just like a 20-minute episode of the show? Especially with that beginning.
When you put it like that, it actually makes a lot more sense. Because like the first half an hour to 45 minutes feel like the first episode of early Kamen Rider in the exact same flow. There is a threat. That threat reveals itself to very well-meaning scientists who just so happen to have all of the tools to perform unethical medical procedures immediately. A hero gains his powers as a result. And then we get into our first fight, and our first fight is very interesting and fast. And we get out of that fight almost immediately, and that's like 25, 26 minutes. That's mostly the first 26 minutes of this movie. Give or take, like, a fire and people getting trapped on a bus, but still. And then everything else is trying to happen very quickly, while also moving at a movie pace, and it makes the whole ending feel really awkward.
Really, really awkward. Totally agree. But before we continue, as we probably could just continue randomly talking, do we want to start with likes or dislikes today?
Let's go with likes first.
All right, let's do likes, because there is actually a great deal to like about this movie. So, Paul, why don't you go first?
I'm going to go with a pretty obvious. Even though a couple of the areas look like they're, well, quarries, there is some nice scenery in this movie. I mean, the interior sets are not great, and because you could tell they're really stagey, but like the seacoast where we have this nice rocky and interesting sea line where they basically take the boat to and from Mount Devil, which is the home of the creatures. Some of the scenery where they're going along on those ridiculous little motor scooters. They filmed it, the outdoor locations in a pretty appealing area. I have no idea where they actually filmed it. I was watching this movie for half a while before I realized, like, wait, I was wrong. I thought this was a Japanese movie. No, it's a Chinese movie, you idiot. So it must be like somewhere somewhere down in Hong Kong or somewhere in South China, I guess is wherever it is. It's a very nice place. And when the movie bothers to show us the scenery and not cut to the bad background scenes for fighting, it's an actually pretty appealing place to set a movie. I mean, better than your average modern episode of Doctor Who, for example. I mean, I could see myself going on the seacoast at sunset and taking pictures of the water and the coastline and whatnot. So they picked a nice place to set this thing. I mean, the radar tower looks great. I mean, nice big radio telescope. All that's really nicely presented for the audience when we're not going at a frantic pace and switching to cardboard sets. But I might be mixing my likes and dislikes a bit there.
No, I totally agree. The location was really good. And it must be Hong Kong because this is a Shaw Brothers production. And I think their studio was specifically in Hong Kong. So Hong Kong and the surrounds. But it cracks me up because I think the thing about the location, and not necessarily the coastline. The coastline was just, it's stunning. And I want to go vacation there too. But not the radio tower necessarily itself, but like the empty highway and the empty roads that go out to the radio tower, all of that stuff was so tokusatsu. And I'm sure Brandon could speak more on that, but it was like so many fights. I'm really mostly just familiar with Power Rangers, unfortunately, but have seen pieces here and there of other shows. And so many fights happen in those abandoned roads, in those abandoned quarries, and they made really good use of them. Like even the scene with the giant crab, with the power lines and everything, and the power junction.
Oh yeah, I love that. Yeah,
that was all super cool. And then they went inside, and then it was like, ugh, maybe not. It's a pretty classic. What year was this made? Do you guys remember 1975?
75, yeah.
It's a pretty typical 1975 science fiction set. I'll just put it that way.
I agree with everything that has been said. I actually really love a lot of sets in this movie a great deal. I kind of even have like my own special kind of charming interest in the science headquarters, with all of its unnecessary blinking lights somehow transferring information.
They were fantastic. I have to admit, the blinking lights were.
and then the weird gauge is saying cyan, yellow, red. Like, what the heck was that all supposed to mean?
I liked the crystal balls.
Yeah.
That didn't seem to have any purpose, but they were there. And I think they were signifying something. I just have no idea what.
I feel like everything was displaying information. Sometimes you need to know how cyan your information is.
It's a good point. I hadn't thought of it that way. I'm clearly just not good enough scientist to understand.
To read all of those special data. All of those printouts on living things.
The printouts.
Oh, I actually did freeze the movie to try to see if the printout said anything interesting. No, it's just repeated nonsense. There's no actual information, which disappointed me. I was hoping for something good. It's not even lorem ipsum anything. It just repeats the same stuff, same three lines basically over and over again, which is kind of disappointing.
That's so sad.
Missed opportunity.
I was really hoping for more, but... So, Brandon, why don't you take us into your like while we're here?
I think my biggest like of them all was the costumes. Not all of them, of course.
No, not all of them. Mm-mm. I'm putting my foot down over all of them. but continue.
Definitely not all of them, but Inframan's suit was impeccable to me. Like, it was one of the greatest, like, visual representations that this movie is attempting to mimic Japanese tokusatsu. It has Kamen Rider eyeballs, its sleeves are very Ultraman, and, like, from that point onward, you know that whenever Inframan is in a scene, they're going to homage something that has happened in Japanese tokusatsu. And all of that happens perfectly with that character and that costume. I also kind of really liked like some of those actual visual homages as well. Like there is a pose that he does to like release a laser beam from his wrist that is literally Ultraman's pose, Ultraman's transformation pose. Inframan literally has a kick and all kicks are Kamen Rider kicks to me. So, like, once that happened, I was already engaged. Whenever the protagonist transformed, I wanted to know what else they were going to give me that I would recognize.
I'm not familiar with any of that film vocabulary, so I had no idea they were homaging anything. I'm interested. Like, you were reading into these fight scenes and the stuff he's doing, and you're seeing a film vocabulary that I'm completely ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you should start listening to Righteous Kick.
I mean, you should.
Nice plug, Jen.
Shameless plug. It is a fantastic show, by the way. I'm just letting you know. It helped because I had listened to the first episode of Righteous Kicked and then gone and watched the episode that they're covering in their second episode, which comes out on Friday. And so I had a little bit more of the vocabulary beyond Power Rangers, which obviously borrows from the entire lineage of Japanese tokusatsu in the first place. But it was really interesting sort of juxtaposing that episode. And so one of the things that I particularly liked about this movie, even though they were so ridiculous, and if anybody is one of our $3 plus patrons, they can go read the chat that we had while we were all watching this movie, his special weapons and how those came out of tokusatsu, like the thunder, what were they called? The thunder fists?
Thunderball fists.
Thunderball fists.
Not a James Bond reference.
They were glorious. And he has a number of weapons and special moves that, you know, engage those weapons that were really cool to look at. So I'm 100% on your side with that, Brandon. But I'm still putting my foot down on all the monsters.
I mean, I'm still being generous, of course, because even the monster costumes that I absolutely hated on a, like, visceral kind of immediate visual reaction level look a lot like early Kamen Rider villain costume. I know at some point this is gonna come up in an episode of Righteous Kicks, but there are some weird old school costumes that I literally cannot name without disgusting people. So like, when those suits are done well, I like them. But the suits that I didn't like were the ones that, for instance, pretend to be dragons, but they really just look like mascot toys, which were really weird for me. Like, Princess Dragon Mom's costume doesn't look like a dragon to me.
I mean...
It's so weird! Like, you see it in flight and you go, that's not possible. Nothing about this looks like it's flying. It looks like a piece of plastic being held up by a wire. And that's kind of weird for me.
Well, like, her costume, though, was at least better than the dragon that they, like, toss on the ground in the very beginning of the movie.
That is indeed true.
Oh, God.
I mean, that thing was like, I'm still not sure what that was, to be honest, or what it was indicating. Like, is that the thing that grew into the mountain? Was that Dragon Mom herself? I don't know! It was just there, and then it wasn't, and it's this big, awkward thing. It was very strange. And I still haven't quite gotten over it, especially since I rewatched the movie right before we recorded.
That was brave of you.
It was. I was mostly just listening to it in the background to, like, remind myself of everything, but it's not that bad, all things considered. So anything else, Brandon?
In terms of likes, I think that I've covered everything.
Alrighty then. So I'm gonna go with Dragon Mom and her plot to take over the world. Not that it was the greatest idea ever constructed, but as we kind of discussed when we were doing the chat, and you guys brought up a couple of times, her various stages of, like, reacting to the existence of Ifferman and how she's trying to stop them and everything like that were not terrible.
No, she's actually fighting intelligently. Like, okay, there's a threat here. I should deal with this. Like, wow.
Exactly. It's so rare to see that in a movie. Oddly enough. Granted, she still did the villain monologues, but I appreciate villain monologues in movies like this in which nothing actually makes sense. So you kind of need those to be like, oh, right, okay, I get what you're doing and why you're doing that. And her villain monologues actually made sense. Not everything, but for the most part, I mean, if she had, okay, well, Inframan exists, we have to steal the plans so that we know what the weak point is, that makes sense. They tried to destroy the radio tower because the good guys, quote-unquote, were using it to spot her and her villains, and so that made sense. Like, the individual pieces actually did make sense. And then, of course, she kidnaps the doctor's daughter in an effort to force him to give her the key to Inframan. Also actually makes sense. It's not just like a dick villain move. I mean, it's also a dick villain move. But I got where she was coming from. Not necessarily how she deployed all of her monsters. And I think that goes back to what you were saying earlier, Brandon, where like the first 30, 40 minutes tops feel like a single episode, because the fights actually made sense at that point in time. And then after that, it just became like filler, basically. But I liked that. It's actually a fairly... The plot actually makes sense, which I was not expecting to say about this movie. And yet here we are.
I want to say, like, one of the things that I thought was particularly interesting in a way that I haven't figured out is good or bad yet, is that, as you say, Princess Dragon Mom's plans are actually quite comprehensive. She knows what she needs to do in order to accomplish the things that she needs to accomplish at every point in time. And that actually annoyed me a great deal more when it came to, like, the actual scientists' plans, because they were just, here, be a hero. Here, have thunderball fists. Just kill things. We have faith in you.
That's a really good point.
And we're just gonna keep reading printouts of the living things that we've already seen on camera.
She even implants a spy, which is like one of the coolest things that happens. He's not a very successful spy.
No, like, that was actually the point that I was like, for scientists, are none of you actually keenly observant of anything in the real world at all? Because she kidnaps Zhu Ming, one of the other scientists. They immediately brainwash him in the, like, most, like, mentally violent way that they can. And they just send him back. And I'm looking at him with the very stereotypical "I have been brainwashed" bags under his eyes. And everybody's like, "Zhu Ming, Zhu Ming, we literally saw you get captured and dragged into Mount Devil. Are you okay?" "I'm fine. Let me get back to work right now." And they're like, "Okay, cool." And then the very next scene, he meets one of his colleagues in a corridor, looks him in the eye, and the guy, like, just, like, falls catatonic. And I'm like, all of these things are things that you should have been able to, like, just use common sense and determine were bad ideas. And yet, this is the kind of, these are the kinds of decisions that people who just give a random scientist powers to defeat monsters would make. Just, yeah, just come back to work. You being tortured by the enemy, no biggie. Let's go back to reading those printouts. I need to know how cyan this information is.
I mean, like, the fact that Lema actually says to the main scientist, there's something wrong with him, clearly. And the chief scientist's like, yeah, but, you know, we're good. I'm sure everything's fine. And you just sit there like, okay, you clearly should lose. I'm sorry, but the entire human race should be doomed right now, because Dragon Mom has you guys so outplayed, it's sort of painful. Unfortunately, her monsters just aren't as capable as she is. That's what it comes down to, sadly.
But by the point where that happened, I was like, I had started looking ahead at how long the rest of the movie was, because I'm like,
yes,
surely some point at this movie, She-Demon is just going to, like, pretend to be a secretary or something like that, and we're just gonna play this same Benny Hill level comedy of errors scene again, because, like, you all don't actually have any policies regarding anything other than just giving random people superpowers.
Yeah. That's actually, I hadn't thought of that, and I'm now really disappointed that She Demon doesn't get to go through that.
She Demon deserved a lot more than this movie, to be honest.
She really did.
That's my dislike.
Okay. Which brings us to our dislikes.
Yay.
Paul, since we were about to steal yours, why don't you go ahead and give us your dislike?
My dislike is, okay, so we have a bunch of random monsters under Dragon Mom's control. I mean, She Demon is her lieutenant, and She Demon doesn't get half the credit or ability or opportunity to do anything that she possibly can. I mean, she looks human except for that weird horn on her head. So, I mean, all the other monsters are definitely like rough and tumble sort of folks. I mean, she's the crafty one. I mean, in the fights we see, she uses a dagger. She has the gun. She has the weird pan labyrinth like eyes and the hands thing. And they just waste her. I mean, she brainwashes Chuming, and that's it. I mean, they could have used her as infiltration. They could have used her as a spy. I mean, the whole secretary thing. It's like, in the end, when it comes down to brass tacks, she's just another person who fights Inframan, and she can't even hit with the gun. I mean, she intelligently uses a gun to try to shoot him because everyone else is hitting him and fighting him, but she decides, no, I'm going to shoot him, but she can't hit the broadside of a barn. It's like, come on. I mean, if you're going to have a lieutenant to the big bad, the dragon, to use the TV tropes term, at least make the dragon formidable. Don't waste the dragon.
Wait, who's the dragon now?
She Demon. Dragon is basically the second in command to a big bad.
Oh, okay. See, that's very confusing, though, because the dragon is literally is not the dragon, and then there is a dragon. So I got lost for a moment there.
She's a dragon to a dragon, so yes. Don't waste your dragon, is my point.
Yeah, no.
If you can have a second in command, at least give them more than, just being... just another person for the Inframan meat grinder.
They didn't even use her as eye candy.
I mean, she has a very strange outfit, but they didn't even try to play that up. And they could have. I mean, she could have played the whole secretary thing, like you were saying. I mean, I was half expecting she'd be the one that would be the one that would kidnap the scientist's daughter, because that would make perfect sense. Like, no, I'm not going to do that.
Like, how weird is it that this is a movie where I'm actually asking them to make a character eye candy, especially in the 1970s. Like, there should be at least one eye candy character somewhere in there, and they don't. Like, please do something with She Demon. That would have been an improvement beyond her kind of just standing there and acting like, quote unquote, the dragon, because she's never really allowed to fulfill that role. But she's... mm-hmm. just as much of a lackey as the rest of the monsters, even though you get the impression she has a brain and can use it. But she's never given that chance. So if you're not going to use her as a brain, you might as use her as eye candy.
Use her for something!
I will never ask this from a movie ever again.
I feel like the reason why it bothers me even more that She Demon was so underutilized in this movie is, in the history of Japanese tokusatsu, very pretty, scantily clad, weapon overflowing femme fatales are usually always the people who you're supposed to, like, expect, like, the most chaos out of in this movie. So I half expected her, because she's literally Dragon Mom's second in command in the movie. I expected at least that she would be the most fearsome fight.
Yeah.
Before we get to Dragon Mom. But she fights in a crowd and barely does anything in that crowd fight. It's like, why was she, like, there was a point where I felt like she wasn't even necessarily present except for brainwashing Zhuming.
Yeah, and that anybody could have done because it was by machine. Like, her eye hands did something briefly where they gave him laser eyes, which was weird, but
yeah,
that was it. Any other character could have played that role, and I think you're right. Really, she didn't get to play a major role in the fight scenes, which was super disappointing. And instead, we got two of the monsters that, granted, I loved, which were the robot monsters that have like all with the spring hands and
I love that. Oh yeah, the springy Macy's. Oh god, they're ridiculous.
I loved them. I have to say, totally ridiculous. Agreed, but I loved them. I just didn't love when Inframan fought them. It was just such a waste, and it was such a long fight. Oh my god.
That, I mean, it's a very big, like, I was really intrigued by the design of those monsters, because I was like, oh, you can literally launch your head at an opponent. That's high risk, but hopefully high reward. Doesn't go anywhere. Inframan defeats them by literally tying their necks together in midair.
I mean, but what else are you gonna do with them?
I was like, cut it off, do something. Like, it's so peculiar.
No, I actually, I loved, because they're basically two slinkies, and I think it only makes sense that they're defeated by tangling them together, because every slinky that has ever existed has done that if it has a pair. I'm just saying.
Yep.
All right, Brandon. Did you have any dislikes? I'm kidding. I know you had dislikes. So what was your big one?
Other than the total underutilization of Shidemon, I think my biggest dislike was actually Professor Liu's family.
Why were they there?
Because we needed fodder. Because they couldn't cast extras. Because family drama is somehow supposed to be some kind of interesting narrative device, whereas we're given the most boring children ever, except for Ling Ling.
Yes.
Ling Ling was rad.
Infra Girl!
I want Ling Ling to be Infra Girl very badly. Everybody else?
Yes.
Everybody else could have gone to a hotel while all of this was happening and I wouldn't have been bothered.
I'm actually hoping if anybody that does, you know, Hong Kong tokusatsu or Japanese tokusatsu, that would work too, makes me an Infra Girl movie.
Yeah.
I would not be bothered by that.
I would not complain. I'd love it a lot.
Because she was clearly the most badass character, except for the part where she just kind of wanders off like, they left me outside.
Because like that whole scene was like, okay, I don't like that my big brother is teasing me. Oh, we found a cave. Go in the cave, big brother. Big brother goes in the cave. Big sister comes to the mouth of the cave. Where's big brother? Big brother went in the cave without me. I am sad. Big sister goes into the cave. Ling Ling is still outside the cave. Meanwhile, all of the hostility is taking place on the metal wall on the other side of the cave.
Yep.
And Ling Ling still doesn't know.
Nope. Apparently it was a very long cave.
She failed her perception check.
Your siblings are in peril. Mei Mei never stops screaming that whole time. And Ling Ling's like, I'm sad. Because my big brother is mean to me.
Sad.
What?
She did it so well, though. I mean, her I am sad face and, like, attitude was spot on, I gotta say.
Like, I love the fact that she sold it so well. But, like, if it was just the professor and Ling Ling in whatever penthouse next to the science headquarters, I'd believe that. I'd be down with that. The other two didn't care.
Yeah, can we talk about the conversation that he has with his daughter right before she's kidnapped that was the most pointless scene in the entire movie? And I think lasted at least 5 minutes.
You're being very generous to time.
The most special thing in the world is family! Okay, that's great. You literally have not expressed that through the rest of this movie.
No through line.
He literally says to Mimi, do you know what the most important time to me in my life was? It was when my wife gave birth to you. Meanwhile, I'm like, you literally just gave one of your scientist buddies a suit of armor via surgery that you claim to have been developing for years, and none of your family is ever actually around you until this conversation happens. I don't believe you've seen any of your children in days.
Yeah, no, like, they don't show up until they go to the cave, I don't think.
Yeah, pretty much.
Like, they appear out of nowhere. Like, oh, we are suddenly his family. I didn't even realize who they were. And then it was like, our big scientist dad. And I was like, oh, okay, gotcha. But they are such a random inclusion in this film. I get it for motivation of dad, I guess, because you have to have at least one damsel in distress in every movie or something.
God damn it.
But so pointless. So beyond pointless.
Like, when we got to the cave scene, I literally paused mentally and went, there was a bus full of people who were in danger of an earthquake early in this movie. Were any of these people on that bus?
Yes! I was like, was there at least a connection to that bus? Maybe Ling Ling was on the bus? Or the brother? Or something? Like, to have some sort of, as Paul mentioned, a through line? But no, nothing.
I don't even know which is worse. That I don't know for sure if they were there, or that the answer is more likely no.
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I'm not sure which is worse either.
I mean, we have this focus on this family and the scientists, and all the other major things happen to random people or happen off screen. The bus people, the 10,000 people die because Mount Devil erupts. We don't see anything of that.
We do see the printout, though.
We do the printout that says nothing.
Paul paused. He knows.
Yeah. So annoying.
For all we know, it could have been exactly 10,000 zeros written on a sheet of paper.
It could have been the digits of pi for all I knew.
It's a very contained movie outside of that catastrophic beginning with the weird stiff dragon that flops on the ground and the burning building. Like, the only reason it exists is to establish that Le Ma is a hero.
Right, and that he's worthy of becoming Inframan. Yeah, that's what I got of it.
Yeah. To be fair, that is par for the course for most tokusatsu, especially in Japan. But I do believe that example in Inframan isn't one of the, like, most engaging that I've seen. And I've seen, like, tokusatsu where the reason why we know that the protagonist is a hero is simply because he can ride a bike very fast.
Speaking of riding a bike very fast, we get that scene too.
Yep, that happens. A whole bike chase. The bike needed to show up at some point.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I was like, bikes are totally a thing in tokusatsu, right? Like, there has to be at least one motorcycle. But it still felt like a scene from Chips, which I thought was yes. Hilarious.
It felt like there was no tension.
No! No, they were just, like, going along for a bike ride. Do-do-do!
Yeah, and then the horde of people behind them, yeah.
Oh, right? the sudden bike gang!
Like, what is this? The scientists have turned into a bike gang, into a motorbike gang. What the
Out
heck?
Of nowhere.
Yeah, where were they parking all those motorcycles? That's what I want to know.
We don't see them anywhere outside that radio dish, that's for sure.
No, they did not exist until that very scene, and then you get a motorcycle horde. And it was awesome. I mean, like, I'm not going to lie. That was cool. To show up at a massive fight scene on your motorcycles? Well done.
Yeah.
And then actually help Inframan.
But kind of out of the blue.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see them turn a corner. Like, they fell from a motorcycle tree on the way there.
Exactly. All right. Any more thoughts on the pointless family?
Like, I can't squeeze any more thoughts out of that. Like, they didn't do enough for me to have more thoughts.
No, they really, really didn't. Although, when I was rewatching it, I realized that the reason that the brother freaks out is just a little lizard. And I was like, really, child? Come on. There's an actual monster that you just saw with, like, a drill on one hand and a big old hammer on the other, and you just freaked out over a lizard? I think your sister's right. I mean, I hate to say this.
Yeah.
But she was not wrong when she was teasing you.
Indeed.
All that aside, I think like is a strong word, but I enjoyed most of this movie. Unfortunately, there is one thing that I literally could not watch, especially the second time through. I kind of forced myself to watch it the first time, but then the second time happened and I was like, nope, literal visceral reaction. And that was...
I have a bad feeling what this is.
The nipple tentacle.
Yes! Oh god, the nipple tentacle creature.
I literally want to cover my boobs right now because it just made me so uncomfortable. Oh! And I'm saying this as a person who otherwise loved the monster designs. I'm totally with you, Brandon. They were a great concept, especially the one that looked... It looked like, actually, I think it was a Chinese demon, but the one that had the long hair and the horns, that one was super cool. Mm-hmm. The one that popped out of the egg, that was the one that popped out of the colorful egg, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
I loved, like I said, I loved the slinky monsters. The crab was, I mean, it was a typical crab monster. Everybody has to have one. It was cool. I even loved... I don't know, sort of the powers of the tentacle monster.
Mm-hmm.
The tentacle monster seemed the most fearsome because, I mean, he grows yes. large. He's wrecking the science thing. They're getting their butts kicked by this thing till Ultraman shows up. He seems the most effective of the monsters as far as causing catastrophic damage. I mean, some of the other monsters. Shooting bolts and other things. The slinky monsters are potentially better, but the tentacle monster actually does real actual harm and advances Dragon Mom's goals, because she said wreck the station, and he was doing just that as a tentacle monster for a good long while.
He almost succeeds in, you know, stopping the creation of Inframan in the first place.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, most effective monster. Not so much when he was finally a small monster again and just fighting Inframan.
No.
Because it was, you know, it was Inframan's first fight and he was, you know, not quite used to what he was doing anyway. So it takes a little while to defeat him, but not because he somehow is actually effective as a normal sized monster. But it was super cool how he like burrowed into the earth and then grew as giant tentacles. And he is specifically supposed to, he is a plant monster as opposed to, I don't know, some like sea creature tentacle monster. The tentacles are like supposed to be plant tentacles. But I couldn't look at him. Literally could not look at him when he's in his normal size because it was
the chest and the tentacle on the shape. Yeah, it's kind of like
I can't even talk about it anymore because it was awful. It was awful. So the second time through, I literally just was like, nope, not watching that part. Okay, we're good. Moving on. And I don't know why anyone would make that freaking choice. I mean, what kind of monster do you have to be to have tentacles coming out of nipples? Don't do that!
Let's be even more particular. One of those tentacles was coming out of its head and reconnecting at the nipple.
You looked at it hard enough to know that, Brandon? Oh. Yep. Oh, Brandon.
I'm sorry, I watch a lot of tokusatsu. I look at these things on a regular basis.
This is your jam. Oh, but, oh.
I mean, I hate it too. Let's be sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a lot. That's a very unique decision to have made.
Unique, that's a good word.
I think that part of the reason why it's such a visceral reaction is also because he's such a useful monster, he is the one that we spend the most time actually dealing with. So you can't miss him. Like, you have to deal with that small and large for several minutes in a sustained, although actually very entertaining otherwise, fight.
Yeah, it is actually an interesting fight because most of Inframan isn't there, and it's the scientists who are trying to stop the monster by any means necessary. We get them shooting at it. We have the one that's trying to turn the power back on to get Inframan. He fails, but then he gets rescued enough that he can actually hit the thing. It's an actually interesting fight. I mean, it's a pity the rest of the fights in this movie, as you said earlier, Brandon, just go downhill as they go along. But this fight actually had stakes, clear objectives, and a clear flow to what was happening.
Plus, this monster is also the monster that gets the most interesting practical effects of the movie as well. Like, when it burrows into the ground.
Yeah!
Mm-hmm.
Was actually kind of neat, because you can look at it and know how that was done. That was shot by, like, yeah. that suit actor actually busting into, like, styrofoam and then just putting it into the film backward and all that kind of stuff was actually kind of neat. But that means you have to deal with the fact that he has a tentacle connecting his forehead to his nipple.
Ah!
I'm sorry. Let's state facts. That's weird. But it's also, like, one of the more interesting general characters with the movie. And that makes me feel like it was done on purpose even, and that's even weirder.
I know!
And again, I've seen some weird tokusatsu monster designs.
All I can figure is that it's, like I said, because it felt like some of the other creatures were actually based on Chinese mythology creatures. And maybe that's somewhere buried in a mythos that I am not familiar with. I don't know. Or maybe it was just one creepy dude who was like, tentacle nipples. And I don't like that person.
Neither do I.
So yes, unfortunately, love the monsters. Even, like you said, I enjoyed aspects of that monster, how it was used. I couldn't look at it when it was on screen. So that was a problem. But I've definitely gone on long enough. So let's get to our final thoughts and our grades on this lovely film. Paul.
Okay, so the movie started off promising. There's some nice visuals as long as they don't go inside and the sets go cardboard. But as the movie goes on, the fights get longer. They get less interesting. And the movie just drags to a conclusion and just stops like, oh. That's it. It's over. And it's almost like a relief, especially the second time through. It's like, okay, is it done yet? Is it done yet? No, this fight is still going on, even though there's no real... I mean, the one of the things we didn't mention is, okay, what Inframan almost never actually is, once he's turned into Inframan, actually in any sort of danger. The only danger we actually ever gets in is getting accidentally frozen. And that didn't seem to be direct. Didn't seem to be Dragon Mom's plan. Just happened. And then randomly he remembers the professor telling him about unfreezing liquid ice with this heat missile, so he can get unfrozen and save the day.
That was the bizarrest moment, because it seemed more like it wasn't a memory, but like a pre-recorded message. But why would that be pre-recorded?
Just like, just in case this happens, like, what's the odds of that happening? And why would you ever want to record that? It's like, I mean, okay, yeah, he gets frozen and he's still frozen and he wins. I mean, especially since the fights drag on, especially past after the first one, there's no real sense of flow to reverses, attacks. I mean, he gets shot at in the water, but there's no real connectivity for anything to show. Like, oh, he's gonna get beat. He's gonna get beat. No, he's coming back. This is like dodge, 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 kill.
Oh, there is the moment when she covers the sun, though.
Yeah,
because that was really effective.
Mm-hmm.
It was supposed to be. It turns out that, like, it was not very well expressed in the movie, but if you look at the Wikipedia page, he is actually powered by solar power, but he has a backup generator in case the solar power goes out.
No, that was not expressed at all.
A backup generator that was established in the beginning of the movie as the primary generator, because the doctor looks him in the eye and says that you are powered by nuclear energy.
Exactly.
Yes, he says nothing about solar. So, yes, so it's like, where did Dragon Mom get this wrong idea? And just like, I mean, she falls through with it because that's what she thinks. But where did she get the wrong idea in the first place? So it's like, I was kind of expecting a Superman 4 situation. But nope, the clouds don't do it. I guess I've seen Superman 4, listeners.
I've seen it like 10 times, so it's fine.
So, yeah, okay. I just didn't want people to judge me. So it's like, yeah, it's like... Come on! It's like these fights. I mean, except for getting frozen, Ultraman's. I never get the sense that Ultraman's ever in real danger of losing anything. And people miss with the rays again and again. She Demon, all the other demons. It's like they can't hit a broadside of a barn. And the physical fights, Ultraman just. It's like fighting minion, low level minions that are absolutely positively weak against him. It's like it's boring. So I've kind of come to a conclusion of where I can draw grades as far as, would I ever watch this movie again? And this movie does not reach that bar. I mean, it's not the worst movie you've ever seen, but it does not reach the bar of I would voluntarily watch this again if it was on TV. So I am just going to give it a straight D and be done.
I think that is a fair grade. So, Brandon, how about you? Final thoughts and grade.
All of my final thoughts are essentially make Ling Ling Infra Girl, make Shi Demon actually important. If you actually, like, just want to get a sense of what tokusatsu looked like, what an attempt of tokusatsu looked like in China in the 1970s, you should watch it for fun. But it's not a particularly enjoyable movie past, like, the first two fights. So I'm tempted to just give it somewhere around a C-.
I think that actually sounds about right. I am also going to give it a C minus because...
Well, I'm the grump of this group, I guess.
you're not that much lower than the C minus, don't worry. Because there were some, I think, fun things about this movie, and I have to hand it to the Shaw brothers in the first place. I mean, like, we haven't really given the context of Inframan and its existence beyond the fact that it was trying to capitalize on the success of tokusatsu in Japan. But I have to hand it to the Shaw brothers for sort of taking the risk of making a movie like this. They did not execute it perfectly, but it stands sort of as this interesting sort of cultural piece of Hong Kong cinema in the 1970s. And for that, I enjoyed it. And it had some very cool, like, in general, the actual choreography of the fight scenes was actually pretty good. They just went on way too long. Uh-huh. And as Paul said, there weren't really, despite the fact that an entire city blew up at the beginning, there really weren't any stakes to this film. I'm still, like, absolutely, I'm very confused by the fact that when the TNT is sitting on the ground and there's the fuse that's going towards it, the Inframan feels the need to pick it up.
And fly out.
Well, first, to transform. Because, you know, you gotta do that.
Oh, don't get me started with that.
Right? And then to pick up the bomb and fly it out because he couldn't just pull the fuse out of it. Anybody?
Jen, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
That's right. Apparently. So there's some major absurdities in this movie. But, you know, given what we've watched in torture cinema over the years, this one was more fun to watch.
Granted.
And for that, I can only give it a C minus. So
we average out to a D plus.
Fabulous. I like that. I think that's a good grade. Sorry, Inframan.
You tried your very hardest.
But we really just want Infra Girl.
I did look on Wikipedia wondering if there was any sequels ever made to this. Apparently not.
Shocking. This is my shocked face.
No, but given the fecundity of the Shaw Brothers production series, I was just totally expecting there to be more of these Inframan movies, but I guess it was a one and done.
Yeah, I didn't see like how successful it actually was. Now I want to look at the reception on...
I mean, Roger Ebert gave it a pretty good review.
2.5 stars. What?
Yeah, I did read that, and then he upped it later. So yeah, well, Roger Ebert's always been very kind to genre, so that makes sense. Rest in peace.
3 stars.
I want to say I agree with him in the most part. Again, this is me being generous because I mean this is the '70s, and this was Shaw Brothers' first attempt. So like, I don't want to be too cruel to it. Like, it could have had potential. It just had too many children in it.
Oh, and I have to say really quick, the special effects in this were not awful.
For the time, they were actually quite impeccable.
Yeah, they really were, especially the giant crab scene. There's moments where it's flawless. There are obviously some, like, you know, film cutting pieces, but they're much better integrated than I've seen in most 1975 films, especially science fiction-y ones. Uh-huh. And that was actually a really nice surprise for me watching the film, because I love old school science fiction and fantasy movies, obviously, but like the lasers were well done, even though they're clearly like drawn, sketched on the film, but that's how you did it back then, and it was cool. And so I do have to give the movie credit for that, which again is part of the reason for the C minus and not anything lower than that.
You actually reminded me of a thing that I actually thought was really dope. And again, credit to the practical effects of the movie.
Yes.
But one of the things that I thought was really interesting is how it plays with perspective when monsters start to grow bigger.
Yes.
Because the seamlessness of that transition is better in this movie in the 1970s than some tokusatsu do today.
Mmm.
Ouch. Burn.
That was a big deal for me. I thought that was actually kind of rad.
I love that. All right, so I think it's time to sign off, especially on that positive note that Inferman in some ways is better than modern tokusatsu.
Who knew?
Please no one quote me on that. don't send me emails. Don't send me letters. Oh God.
So take that as you will, everybody, and make sure that you are listening to the newest addition to the Skiffy and Fanti show, which is Brandon and O'Brien and Iori Kusano's Righteous Kicks. It comes out once a month and it's just fantastic. So thank you, Paul, for coming on the show today.
I mean, you guys talked me into this randomly to watch you within Discord, so I got roped into this one way or the other.
I derive great pleasure from doing that too. And thank you, Brandon, for being my expert guest today.
Thank you for thinking that I'm an expert.
You're the closest I have, because Iori wasn't available this week.
Fair enough.
And with that, awkward ending, and see.
Stay frosty.
If you would like to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/skiffyandfanti or find us on Twitter @skiffyandfanti, our webpage skiffyandfanti.com, or you can even send us an email @skiffyandfanti@gmail.com. The intro music for this podcast was taken from Rock Thing by Creo. You can find out more about their music on freemusicarchive.org.